Well, good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to Church Talk Live.
Bill and Chris, Tenny Britton here today to talk with you about targeted technology, how to understand the generations and the technology that they're most comfortable with, and how can we apply it to the church?
You know, we talk regularly with our youngest children who are in their 20s, mid-late 20s, and early 30s about technology. And we have had these conversations around the younger two never remembering a time when we didn't have cell phones. The older one can remember when I had a pager,
yeah.
When we finally did get that that cell phone. And, you know, I heard not too long ago that the iPad was actually, first iPad, I was going to say discovered. But the first iPad was released in 2010, which blew me away. I was thinking, golly, it must have been at least the mid-2000s. But, you know, we've really gone from this place where we've said, well, you need a new computer, you need a new laptop every 2 to 3 years, to where we can't wait the 2 years to get our cell phones because the newest, greatest one comes out a month before after we purchase that cell phone we've been waiting for so long.
Well, you know, and technology really is generationally based. It's before one generation even can move on, that technology is antiquated, old stuff. And so today we're going to look at the four adult generations that are currently in the church and the technology that they were raised with and that really created the core of how they learn and in some ways how they view and experience the world around them.
Well, you know, this is such a powerful topic, even though people have been talking on this for at least, golly, 10 years, 15 years. But when you sit in a room with women who are in their 70s and 80s, and some of them are talking about how the Skype is the one way that they're able to keep up with their grandchildren and their children and their great-grandchildren, when you have others who say, I will not get a cell phone, to when you're sitting with a group of ministers who are in their early 60s who say, my daughter wants to text, but I refuse to get a cell phone to text. You know, we go back and forth. And this plays out in our sanctuaries and amazes me that we have congregations that are still fighting. We might call them worship wars, but it's not really. They're technology wars. We don't want screens. We don't want projectors. We don't want this. We don't want that. Not taking into account the different generations that we're trying to reach.
Well, just recently, we were having a conversation with a pastor who had been called in front of his board because he talked about Twitter from the pulpit. And they told him that he could never talk about that kind of technology again. It's like, okay, I can predict when that congregation, it's already ceased to be relevant, I can predict when that congregation will close because they're not able to move into or touch, reach, or be relevant to those who are adept at that technology. The flip side of that, though, are churches that have gone and run into the new technology, leaving those who are uncomfortable with it, who don't understand it, in the lurch, going, but what about us? And yes, there's a place in which the what about us is really need to step up and support the future of the church. On the flip side, dishonoring them and making them feel uncomfortable so that they can't worship is a problem as well.
Well, there's something to be said for texting 101 classes to be held at your church and to give the options to say something like, now those of you with your cell phones, you may want to da da da, or those of you who have that, you may want to engage da da da. A few years ago, I was in a congregation, lots of youth in there, and I said, hey, why don't you text some of your friends who aren't in church and get out your cell phones, and you see them kind of look down and they kind of look sideways with their eyes towards their parents and grandparents. And I said, we both know you've got your phones. Parents and grandparents, look the other way just for the purpose of church. And it kind of, I mean, a little bit of humor broke that down. And that day, hopefully, we were able to give a little lesson and a little preview of what could be possible.
Now, a couple of caveats. We want to say as we go into this that this session is first of two parts. Today, we're going to explore the different generations and their comfort level and what worship looks like when we're catering to or reaching that generation. And then in a future episode, we're going to look at how do we bridge between the generations so as not to alienate or leave out the future or the past.
So you're going to find yourself identifying with one of these four generations. And we invite you to have kind of an open mind for the others that are going to be around you. And the four generations, just to highlight up front, are the radio generation, the image generation, the MTV generation, and the digital generation. It'll be interesting to me to see which one you're right now identifying, saying, oh, that's what I am, but which one maybe you really are.
Right. Well, there's a second caveat as we jump into that. And that is, you need to understand that this is, we're talking about a bell curve, that we're not talking about the early adopters or the late adopters or the never adopters and, you know, we've adopted it before it even exists kind of people. We're talking about the majority in the radio generation, the majority in the image generation, and so on. You will find 85-year-olds who can text lickety-split. And you can find 20-year-olds who say, I am not going down that route. I am not selling my soul for technology. So there's a little of everything there. We're talking about the big batch in the middle, the bell curve of each of the generations.
Well, let's jump into this. Right. Let's start with the radio generation. These are the folks who were born and raised before the 1950s. They're more familiar with the radio shows like Little Orphan Andy and... Annie.
That tells you what generation you're not a part of.
Yeah. I was thinking Amos and Auntie, but were they on radio?
Yes, they were, actually.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And didn't soap operas start, some of them start
yes,
on radio?
They did.
Okay,
indeed
see,
they did.
I know a little bitty bit. And they would maybe be familiar with early TV, like Toast of the Town.
Yeah, I bet you don't know who that is unless you're of that generation.
And we're not going to tell
that's
you.
That's right.
Right? Go look it up.
Go look it up.
Oh, go look it up on your computer
that's right.
Via
that's
Wikipedia
probably the only place you're
whatever.
Find it.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Magazines
were mostly the supporting imagery with only a
text.
Few obvious.
Yeah.
Well, okay, because pictures weren't really that big when you look at it.
Right, except for Life and Look magazine and National Geographic. The rest of them were really a lot of text with some supporting little images. The images were not depended upon for carrying the message of the magazine.
And there was something called the McGuffey reader.
That's what my dad learned on.
Right. Yep. Usually it was very largely text-based, and that was what was popular in the schools.
That's
what
right.
was
That's
really
how
being used.
Read. That's right.
Okay.
That's
All right.
right.
So what we want to do now is talk about categories, right? So within these, image and visualization, participation, interactivity, technology, learning style, and then worship style. And what we're...
And we want to say it's not worship style.
Okay.
It's worship technology that touches that generation. That this is not about style. It's not about what kind of music you use or what instruments you use. This is strictly about technology. It has nothing to do with style.
That's right. I misspoke.
Okay,
didn't
great.
I? Yeah. Okay. So let's jump into to image.
Okay.
So what kind of images for
radio? Right, well, the image, when you think about the radio generation, is, if you will, is a little black and white image of a young person, maybe a young adult, crouched next to the old, big old radio, listening attentively to every word of The Shadow Knows or of what's going on in the world and the Korean War, et cetera, et cetera.
But you know, when I see that image, it's always families around there. It really
indeed.
Was family-based, right? Unlike...
Right.
Like,
well, we'll talk about that
a little
bit.
See later on. Yeah.
Right.
So it's family based, and the visualization. When you think about how you were to visualize things, it's word pictures.
That's right.
So that as they're talking, you can see Dick Tracy talking on his whatever it's called, and Little Orphan Annie. Yeah, doing whatever Little Orphan Annie would do.
And you know, when the Hindenburg crashed, the word pictures that were painted, and yes, there was a video of it, but most people heard it on the radio. And the storytelling, if you will, which is not really storytelling, but the imagery of word images was very important. Okay, well, the third part is participation. How did the radio generation participate in this technology? And that is, they listened attentively, they concentrated on each word and each phrase, and then they took the time to wrestle with it, to evaluate it, to, you know, make it a part of them, to reflect on it, that was very much a part of this generation. It's hearing and evaluating. What does that mean?
And it's really very much single tasking, unlike the multitasking that many, most at least, of us do. You're listening, and that's where your ear is. And you don't really interact until after the program is complete. And your interaction is going to be conversational, and you're going to be talking about things like, what did you hear? What was that?
And you can tell a lot of when you have conversations, say, did you hear? Instead of saying, did you see? Because they were about hearing. They were aural people. The technology of the day was amplification.
Yeah.
You know, we in the church anyway, you know, it was we got our microphones and speakers to make them louder. And, of course, there was radio, but that wasn't introduced into the church per se. But the technology that they were embracing of the day was amplification. Their learning style was lecture, storytelling, and reading. Those were the three ways in which they typically gathered information. They heard a lecture, they heard storytelling, or they read.
It was very information-based.
It was, exactly.
And
which,
we see,
which really brings us to worship.
Right, that's what I was about to say. It really brings out, or we see that in the worship technology that reaches our radio generation folks, and that is, it's corporately focused. We want to sing songs, and we do sing songs about we and us. The hymns have a theological message to them. Yes, some of those message or those songs, some of us sing and say, "Oh my gosh, what is that about?"
And the messages were very theologically intricate as well.
Right, and I'm thinking about a congregation where they use, and a lot of our congregations do, don't they? That have the new hymnal and the old hymnal, and one of the men's reason for wanting to use the old hymnal was because it had blood songs in it. That theology that was is lacking, at least in our radio, folks, generation. Lots of congregational reading.
They read all the lectionary texts, all four of them.
All four.
That's right.
Responsive readings are part of that.
Right.
The sermons are multi-layered, right? You have 3 points. And a joke or a poem.
Right?
Joke, 3 points, poem.
Right. And they were logical.
Yes.
They were analytical. You listened carefully. And in fact, in worship that is designed for the radio generation, if you close your eyes, you really won't miss anything. Now, that's not an indictment. That is because the listening and the word was so important.
Would you agree that it's sequential, that if you missed a piece of it, you missed it? That's part of that single focus, so that a sermon going would go, again, from point A to point B to point C, and if somehow you tuned out on point A, not that many of our folks would do that, you would not get point B?
You might.
Would you agree?
I agree with that in that day, at least. That doesn't, even those taught in seminary now don't go that far, generally, but... Yeah, I mean, that is the point. It's point A, point B, point C.
Sure.
They build on another. Okay.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about the image-driven generation. These are the folks who were raised with a television in the living room. They images is all important to them. And in the image, the icon for this group is a family sitting around the television in the living room with TV dinners on metal TV trays.
I was trying to explain that to the children not too long ago. We were talking about TV dinners, and they're like, what? You know,
yeah.
And metal trays. And they just could not believe we have had wooden trays, I think, the whole time. And yeah, we're going to have to take them to some yard sale. So, you know, the books were things like Fun with Dick and Jane. I'm sure many of you that grew up in the late 50s or 60s
how
in particular.
Yep.
Yeah. Fun with Dick and Jane. We have a few copies of that for nostalgia purposes right now. So it's got this image base. So, you know, you think about Fun with Dick and Jane, you've got those pictures that are going. International Geographic, Smithsonian Magazine, all those pictures really, at least in our household, began to pick up around that time.
Well, and they spoke to a generation. The visualization, how they visualized their world, was image-centric. They saw things through images. Mm-hmm. The photographs, of course, the television, mm-hmm. but image-based was all important.
Right.
The interactivity, while you're watching a television show, You waited to have conversation until the commercial breaks. Or, if you will, small groups in churches were very important in this time. We would do thus and so, and then we'd break up into small groups and had conversation because it was, you know, this is how we moved in and had the conversation.
We're really in this generation, and I mean, when you think about the learning style, it's watching, it's individually focused. I mean, Mr. Rogers and Captain Kangaroo, Mr. Rogers has been kind of making a resurgence, some of the old ones, and, you know, I catch it all the time. I've been looking for Captain Kangaroo to come back around, but it's individually focused. Mr. Rogers is asking, won't you be my neighbor, right?
Exactly.
So we're going to watch, not exactly yet interact with him.
And in very real sense, that becomes part of our learning, the way we learn.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's move into worship. How do we worship with the image-driven generation? Well, first, and this is where we often hear a lot of pushback, even from those who are our age, is that it's individually focused. The words of the songs are often generally me and I, not so much us, because it's about me. This, come on, we're the me generation. What else could we say?
Yeah, but it's that me and I that I want to argue back that becomes part of the collective we.
Right, it is. Right? There is a collective,
So,
it's not quite Borg, but it's close.
Yeah, well, and I'm wondering, you know, I'm thinking about POW bracelets, and that was a very individualistic, what you could do, what you could have. It was about an individual, but it was a day of protest, if you're young, older than I am. So, you know, that the people came together and they protested around that. So it's got this individual component to it, but we still are going to do it within a sense of we.
Right. In this word, in worship in this generation, there is screen technology.
Yeah.
We do put things on the screen, but it's not just words. We actually, the words for the songs also have images, and the sermons will have images to support the sermon. It's incredibly, again, individualistic, but it's all supported by the image.
Well, and drama, video, drama, I mean, all of that's a part of that,
exactly.
Right?
Right, yeah, thank you.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
well, that morphs into the MTV generation that, you know, picks up, I think, in those late 70s, but particularly in the early 80s, our kids are coming up in that time. And, you know, as we were getting ready for today's episode, we were talking about some of these differences. And, you know, we grew up with TV going off at, I don't even know,
midnight.
Time. I wasn't allowed up that late.
Right. 11:30 or midnight.
And then you waited in the morning for it to come back on. It had that round thing that now looks like one of those nuclear symbols or something to me.
The test pattern.
Test pattern, yeah. And that, and the Star Spangled Banner,
the
flag, right? And you went from to that. But now they've got 24/7 TV.
It's cable.
Oh,
it's,
my gosh.
It's, you know, cable and network, and it's always on, always there. And so, if you will, the MTV generation, whereas we were raised with television in the living room, they're raised with television in their bedroom.
Yeah.
And they're, the image, if you will, of that generation is latchkey kids with the big television babysitter.
Yeah.
We sit them down and let them watch TV, keep them occupied, get their minds going to the alpha waves or whatever, try and keep them, you know, babysat.
Well, so, and what are they watching? Sesame Street, Reading Rainbow. I mean, they're getting a lot of their learning that way rather than their parents interacting with them.
And on top of that is these programs were used in the schools.
Yeah.
I mean, not just the videos, but also the books and so on were brought right in the school. So it became really always on, this connectivity stuff of like 24/7 television. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that really says everything about visualization, that it's fast-paced, it's video-driven, little is left to the imagination. You know, you start to get those videos and you're like, you can show that on television? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but it's such a bleep, bloop, blip. You know, and that's one way to explore this for yourself is watch go to MeTV or one of the old shows of showing the older shows and use a stopwatch or a sweep hand on your wristwatch and count between the scene changes or the view changes where the camera goes from here to here.
Yeah, that's good.
And then watch something that's current and watch. And it's boop, 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 boop. Boop. It's just, it's fast-paced, moving all the time. All right, go ahead.
when it comes to how they participate, it's very experiential. And so probably that's not surprising, because their interactivity, the way that they like to interact, is social group driven, and they appreciate casual conversation.
You know, whereas we talked about how the baby boomers or the image driven folks, they, you know, talk about have conversation at the breaks,
yeah,
and the older, the radio generation had conversations after the show. Well, the interactivity of these MTV generation is while the show's going,
right,
they're just chatting and whatever, and it's sort of in the background. Mm-hmm. We're not quite to the Twitter age. That's with our next group, but they're having conversation, and the show, for instance, is just the show. It's feeding them. It's giving them the information. They're following it. They're really the first generation that really does multitasking very mm-hmm. well. But they're following the show, but they're having conversations as they do. So they're just interacting with their social group.
Sure. Well, that's not surprising, because when you take into account that their technology is video driven and evidenced by video games, you know, I can't even get it out. They're interacting and they're experiencing one another in really odd, to me, very odd and interesting ways.
Well, exactly. In terms of, you know, the video games are now, you know, across global. But, you know, in this generation, they were really very much into video driven, video games. You know, we did the TV generation. I can remember when we got our first Pong game, you know, man, that was so exciting. You know, in the MTV generation, we were into, you know, Nintendo, and we hadn't got the Xbox yet, but, you know,
Pac-Man.
It was, yeah, you know, the Pac-Man, there you are. Maybe not quite, but anyway, or beyond that. But, you know, that it was really, it was interactivity, it was fun, it was video, and it's fast action. It's boom, 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 which really plays into their learning style.
Right. Well, their learning style then, of course, is in movement, and it's interactivity, interpersonal interactivity. You need social group shares and collaboration, and there's a lot of peer sharing right there. So you don't learn in and of yourselves. You're learning with other people, and here's that word again, experiencing with other people.
And I want to just, because this is going to become very different to the next generation, is that the MTV generation really is in person. They are personal. They sit together. They talk together. They want to have this conversation more than the wider conversation, which we get into in a little bit, the digital conversations. So what does it look like for worship?
Here it is. Well, worship then has to be that fast pace, fast driven. There's got to be this emphasis on you might call it community, but tribe. You want to get this tribal piece, pulling people together. It's practical. The sermons have to be practical and relevant, and relevant in terms of both personal aspects, but also social aspects, helping people to see themselves within the social world.
Well, you know, and the personal part is so important, because whereas the image generation was all about I and me, you
yeah.
still see and hear I and me in the MTV generation. But the I and me in that generation is not only I and me, it's really the imperial I and me. We're talking about the group. When I say I mean us. And of course, that's not always the case, but I mean, just again, the bell curve thing, you know, it is about how we or how they are experiential and participatory in a social group.
You know, it might be more accurate to say we, that the we is like the mouse in my pocket. We is me and the mouse and
right.
and everybody else in my tribe that's hanging out. And, you know, there really is a concern for others. Our daughter, middle daughter, who very much is an MTV kind of generation person, at the very tail end of it, really. I remember her having some friends parents that we weren't so wild about. And she said, Mom, where do you take this seriously? Isn't this what you've been teaching us all along, that everybody's a child of God and everybody's part of it? And I thought, well, we've never taken it that seriously. But, you know,
that's what a bitch.
Yeah, it did. Oh, my gosh. They were listening all these years.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but it brings it
it's
all
a multitasking
home.
Thing.
Yeah, it brings it all home very much there. There is an openness and a whole sense of not just the one, but of the all. Well, let's move on to digital generation because we are running short on time.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Well, the digital generation is this generation that is, of course, they're the youngest group, yeah. And they don't remember a time in their lives when the internet was not a part of their lives. They don't really remember a time where there wasn't the internet, whereas the rest of us are going, really? Yeah, they don't remember a time without internet. They don't remember a time without cell phones. Some of them now don't even remember a time really well without the beginning of smartphones. This group yeah. is the connected group. They're connected not just locally, but they're global. They're global
yeah,
and local. They're the whole span. They are wired 24/7, and I'm talking about Starbucks wired. Yeah. I mean connected to each other 24/7.
Well, you know, as you're saying, Starbucks, many of them live in communities that don't have Starbucks. And they are with generations who have been closed in, many of the who have never even left their counties. I'm just thinking about some of the rural communities out there. And to try and help the people in those communities understand that their young people really are local,
That's right.
They're having conversations with people clear around on the other side of the world. We have, what are they called, an adopted family, right, over in Romania, and it's been so odd. We've been having to go through our organization, our adoptive organization, to talk to them maybe twice a year, and now they're our friends, and we're talking to the children and the mothers via...
Friends by Facebook.
Right, our Facebook
right.
friends, yeah, and we're talking to them via that and finding out about them. That's this global part that is very generational. It's no longer... located or dictated by location. And so the image for this is texting and video-driven conversations.
Well, you know, you thought just the other day we were at Barnes & Noble's,
oh
and
my
you
gosh,
saw
yeah.
this. I wish we'd snapped a picture because we could have taken a picture. This would have been the image here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were sitting in the Starbucks at the Barnes & Noble's, and there was a young woman at a table near to us. She had a book. The book was propped up.
Yeah, and the book wasn't being used for reading.
And it was a real book, right? It was
right.
a real book, right? And the book was propped up, and there was her phone, her little smartphone. It wasn't very big. It's not like it was a tablet. And it was resting up against that book, and she was having a conversation with a man. She had her headphone in, and there she was, just talking away.
And you know, it was like a telephone, because we glanced over, and we could see his face.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This was, you know, a Skype video call or a Google Hangout
or whatever. Yeah.
But, you know, they were having conversation. They were so connected, even though they were across the mouth. So the image really is this texting. We have relationships beyond the personal stuff, which
sure,
is going to be
right.
very important in a little bit.
Right.
All right. Well, let's move on. The visualization for this group, or how they visualize, is really in sound bites and IM bites, instant messaging bites. You know, the 140 characters or less, the whole Twitter thing, or the SMS, which is, I think, 240 characters, whatever it is. You know, I'm not a digital generation person, and I don't count. But, you know,
it says you can't.
That's right. It's in sound bite. It's snip, 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 snip. And that's really a how they visualize things, is it's in short little pieces, and they're not meaningless, they're not platitudes, they are meaningful bits of information in little segments. It's almost like if you're looking at coding, you know, the computer coding, it is in like little sequences, little tiny bites of information.
Sure, and so that participation is through digital connections, and they are interactive with constant connectivity and group sharing.
24/7.
You know, yeah, well, it's like our son playing games. He works many into late in the evening, or he goes out and late in the evening. It's nothing for him to be playing his games with his friends out on the West Coast. We're in the Central Time. He's playing out there, but it's not just one-on-one. There are several of them, California, Arizona, and somehow they're all playing these games together.
Exactly. The video games has taken on a much more global span.
Sure.
And they are wired in 24/7. You know, yeah. I don't know how often that one of our children will get up in the morning and they'll be stumbling stumbling down the stairs, they'll be tired, whatever, and they'll share, you know, well, I was up at 3 in the morning because so-and-so texted me, and they were going through something, and so, you know, I was texting them back. And so there's just, again, this 24/7 interactivity, and which is, of course, the interactivity is very much about constantly connected and group sharing. They share among the group.
Right.
Again, the whole video game throughout the whole world, if you will, but it's group sharing.
Well, and that means that their technology is digitally embedded. I mean, everything is about the digital. It's about the I don't know how many of them. Well, they more tweet than Facebook these days. I think so. And I just saw a new social media place, and I'm going, no, not anymore. Not anymore.
We've only just begun.
Yeah. So how did they learn? They learn through interaction, through participation. They have peer and network connectedness, but that doesn't mean that it is, as you've said, face-to-face.
In fact, and this really comes in play in a moment, we start talking about worship, is that in some ways, it isn't even face-to-face.
Yeah.
That face-to-face is becoming somewhat less comfortable than the wired connectivity. Now, there's a very strong sense by the other generations who look at that and say, well, that's not a real relationship.
Right.
And we challenge that. That's, although we would like to say, well, you know what, you really have to be in person. Not the same, and not so much, that these relationships can be, they're not always, but they can be very real.
Well, it depends on where you're having those conversations. I mean, so conversations like on Facebook, right? I mean, you put it out there for the universe, and to really have relationship, you have to do what Brené Brown says, is that people have to earn the right to hear your story.
Right.
And so when you're tossing it out there, that's not really relationship.
Well, and I don't think the digital generation is going to would agree. Disagree with that.
Yeah,
but that's not that's how they stay connected.
Sure.
But they build friendships. You know, I have almost 2,000 friends now.
Yeah.
It's a business account, but you know, I have a whole bunch, and I look at some of these younger folks, and they got 20 or 30 40 friends. They're very much more selective than I am.
Sure, and I'll say that although I'm not this digital generation,
obviously.
That a few years ago, several friends and I were talking about how we do our friendships in church all across the country, literally, but it's by checking in with each other by phone each week, or, you know, even two or three times by week, sometimes through the emails. So you can do that connectedness across. You've got to be very, very intentional. We got to talk about worship here.
All right,
right?
Let's move into worship.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, worship with the digital generation is interactive and impersonal. Now, when we impersonal, interactive, if you will, they don't want to break up into small groups and have a conversation. They want to, you know, if they want to have interactivity via text, via Twitter, via Facebook, via just leave me alone, thank you, I will do this from here.
Well, that's, I mean, and one of my favorite parts about this is that now you're seeing sermons that are crowd determined or congregationally
crowdsourced
or congregationally sourced, so that you've got your folks that are sitting out there in the congregation, and they can text questions up there to you. They can text feedback to you. They have insight, and an adept preacher up there is able to pick up on that and go. And often there's somebody up there kind of feeding what's in there, but the really adept preachers are able to receive it themselves and
keep
move on
going.
There.
Yeah,
keep
preaching
just
keep as
moving
they go.
It. Keep
and
moving
it's a
it.
Rare pastor, probably not my generation, but who can, you know, they can stand up there, just receive the text and keep on going. Whereas, you know, as you say, I've been in a number of churches where someone on the platform is filtering through the texts and the Twitter feeds or whatever, and jotting down those questions and get them up there. Now, this in the worship, this stuff is so, it's an embedded, and it has to be digitally embedded within the congregation, within your screen technology, you know, offering the opportunity for interactivity. You know, right now there's this whole, since Twitter, they've had the hashtags, which is, well, if you don't know what a hashtag is, we're not going to go
not
into
today.
That tonight. Right, not today. But the hashtags, I was at an event not so long ago where I was leading a seminar, and there was several people who couldn't be at the seminar, and one woman took it on herself to do the, if you will, the little sound bites or the 140 character bites with Twitter hashtags, and every 2 or 3 minutes, she was sending out a tweet about something I said, and it went to this hashtag, and people could search it and follow the hashtag, follow the seminar. And in the end, I went back and reviewed it, and she'd got all the major points of everything I'd said, and they were the other group was able to participate. That's what worship looks like today.
Well, you know, we maintain that one of the ways to stay on the cutting edge is just to watch the major networks in the morning. Good Morning America, shout out there, is probably my favorite early morning news feed. But you've noticed more and more that they have Skype information crawling across the bottom, and all kinds of pieces. So
and
it
Twitter
says so and so,
whatnot,
yeah, well, Twitter, actually, that's what I was thinking, that the Twitter is coming on there. So and so from Twitter is thinking da 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 da. And so if we could figure out a way to do that in our messages, that someone's tweeting onto our hashtag, and then we're able to run that at the bottom of the screen, it gives you a sense of what other people are thinking.
Exactly. Okay.
All right.
So that's worship. And we've got other resources on digital worship. My blog has a lengthy article on how to do digital worship, BillTinneyBritton.com. And there's lots more out there. And we will be back next week to talk about how do you tie worship between the digital and the radio and everything in between without displacing everybody.
Anybody.
And with that, I think we're out of time.
We are out of time.
We'll see you next week.
Have a great week.